city down in the community. I could be wrong.
Thank you. You and I know that the fact that we're in the fact that we're in the asset, we've got $15.
Now we're confronted with the opportunity to get involved in a lot of this. And it seems to me that there are people who like to compete, who are wanting to modernize, who want to get more history, where we are keeping handicapped at the same time, to either force them out of climate history, or force them into the entire future, and to give them competition, and to utilize the empty finish to climate change, for getting the cut so. What we're trying to do is say, well, here's the opportunity, people can go ahead and stand up longer, and the limitations on our business are open. It could utilize the same business. You can stand and you can offer it to people. You can offer it to people to get involved. Instead of being forced to limit the operations of the company. I feel that the competitors and the people like me are well very happy. Thank you.
You think so?
Yeah. He's going to be a good to do that. I don't think he's going to be a good to do that. He's going to be a good to play a good tactic with his language. Some of the money in Alaska, so you can offer them to the money.
required to make your action different from that.
I thought they were trying to. I Tim, one of those bills is outside.
I don't know.
enough to know that they never need to. If you're trying to do it, commercial fishing and putting all over the
I speak in favor of the legislation, but I would also speak in favor of any other additional changes that might be required to Title 22 to bring that title in conformance with the spirit of this particular bill. My understanding, there is a possibility of, just for conformance purposes and for consistency, modification language needed in some of the other sections of the Title 22. That very briefly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, would be my testimony in this regard.
The question continues. Chairman, I was asked a question about this bill earlier today. We've had the judicial retirement on this matter before us. But one of the things we've had is most likely feeling by the voters when they didn't like our pay rate. I'm trying to reconstruct by looking here in Title 22 what really is the judges right now, the other than I can say. And I know they have to report the study right now to answer that question. I see something
going on. I've
got a long description here that we've got.
They
make no contribution. They only get something like 5% per year of service of the 70% of the funding. That's still kind of, I didn't find a change in the supplement. Any questions? What is happening in the Title 39 and Section 3 bill? Okay, I guess that's just taking them out of the PDRS. Taking them out of the retirement system that they're in. And of course, I get their contribution back. Chairman, I guess the only thing, the other thing I have is there's no such thing as constituent member association of the Alaska Bar Association, unless it's changed recently. And we are merely an association that exists coincidentally in my state, and we've become an Alaska Bar Association. It's hopefully a matter of minutes. Do you have any more questions?
Thank you very much for your attention and help.
Okay. All right. I think next we have Mr. Sheldon Breaker.
That's close enough, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Breaker.
Don
Breaker and the original spelling.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to come and be participating in the system that we have. I sit on the other side of interpretation sometimes, and I appreciate. My name is Sheldon Spurker, magistrate of your own, and I'd just like to comment on the bill in certain areas. Personally, I feel that it is necessary for us to be promoted to initial retirement, primarily because we have the same functions that the district does. Responsibility. And also, as Mr. Hammer alluded to earlier, we do have the extra responsibility for Mr. Business. Financially, the aspects of the bill are not overbearing, I think, as far as budgetary consideration is concerned. There are 11 to 13 magistrates, I think, that would be included at this particular time. The Magistrate Association has agreed that we would even be willing to join a contributory retirement fund. Not necessarily be bound by the particular statute that we've written in front of us to get our contribution back and then first. When I started with the court system, I was in 7 years as a magistrate. My beginning salary was $392 a month. Since that time, I had progressed to where I'm in a $30,000 bracket. So the administration has been very kind and has worked very hard to upgrade the magistrate position. And I don't think there's any magistrate in the state that would say differently. We have had excellent opportunities to appeal benefits. When I started, there was no health program, there was no retirement program, and it took me 2 years to go out and sign up and start making payments into the current system. And last year, there was a bill that corrected all of the outstanding benefits, and we were allowed to make payments into the current system. So there was no retirement benefit for several years, many years, before statehood, and of course, up through the early part of statehood, in 1972, I believe. And the magistrate since that time has been able to participate in the first. I do feel that there are areas that and equitable there, but judges are graduates of law schools or members of bar. Magistrates are, for the most part, are not. Really, now there's a recent trend to appoint attorneys as magistrates, so there are now several attorneys who are magistrates and who are not getting any type of judicial retirement as well. On a basis of law school training, and there is no such thing as, of course, in being a judge in law school. There is only experience and common sense and interpretation of the law as it's on the statute. And I don't know if being an attorney really has a strong bearing on the bench, only in technical matters. And I have resources through the library and through other attorneys if it's that technical that I can't answer. But I said, I appreciate that. Thank you. And also a compliment of being here.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt once considered appointing layman in the Supreme Court of the United States and asked Justice Douglas, who was sitting in the question, or probably shouldn't have discussed the spinning subject with him with another Bill Douglas anyway, in 1944, because he couldn't get his counsel to the point he was concerned. And he's thinking of appointing Robert LaFollette Jr., the senator from the council, son of the senior senator, because he was in the club in the Senate, he had to appoint him, but he wasn't a lawyer. And Justice Douglas, he tells the story that he said there's no question that no lawyer could be appointed, which seems like a mistake, even when he would have been one. But you might enjoy that story.
That's fine, by the way.
Okay, questions from committee members? I have one more question. How much retirement would you get under TGRS as opposed to under the proposed bill?
Well, it's 10% per year, and maximum 50% at 10 or 20 years. The conditional is 5%, maximum 15 years is 75%. So it's looked at before. No one denies that. Well, so 50% compared to 75%, 15 years compared to 20 years. So we're aware of that. But we don't want to make it too selfish as far as the... I think the question is, the other 50 magistrate positions, the 55 magistrate positions, are classified part-time and not full-time. What about them? We can only judicial retirement and they don't. That could be considered an equity. However, there are, most of those magistrates have full-time jobs and they have benefits from their employment, whereas the full-time magistrates are just that. They have for the court system alone.
Question, Mr. Chairman, calls me the word if I'm good. How long do you say you've been a magistrate judge?
7 years, okay.
Are you going to the fact that the bill aging the committee that would, for lack of four votes, that would make it possible for magistrates with 10 years' experience to be considered a district court judge?
Yes, sir. I've heard that, and I did not know the status of it, but I know where there was a bill.
Well, the problem is that there was enrollment in publishing. Perhaps it was addressed to one individual unit and it was not signed about the bill. Anyway, it would seem that the testimony would also support that bill if we ever get back to it. I suspect that magistrates are part of the judiciary system, is that correct?
That would be an interesting question. We're not considered judicial officers in certain areas, and other areas we are. And we're considered classified employees in certain areas and unclassified employees in other areas. That's an answer to the question. I don't think it doesn't matter.
Are you turning off them?
No, sir, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm practicing. But we have a very unique classification in respect to that thing. No one other state employees like it.
It's a good question. I'm trying to put it in how this relates to some of the things we passed last year now. Maybe Mr. Johnson can take some questions on this legislative board of retirement benefits, which deals with all systems of the state, retirement systems. There's some contagious. I wonder if this particular retirement thing would be involved in that board. I don't know.
Yeah, there is an answer.
I don't. And another one that I have. Also, if in fact, I remember the judiciary then not to fall under the other commission, which conducts an ongoing deal of compensation and retirement benefits, and then the legislature doesn't represent other commissions. That commission is thrown on the court, and then the judiciary also. So, do we have any conflict of those?
I think you're looking back to the other commission and find things, including the commission, that change that definition. I don't think there would be.
At the present time, magistrates are not under salary commission. They are salary set by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then, especially in about the retirement system. For retirement, you have to already retirement system in the state, and I have a concept there.
Any more questions for witness? Board of Retirement, I thought that they just were a watchdog.
Are they not recommendations?
Yeah, they don't.
They have to review every bill, that's right.
Every day.
Oh, I agree. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to get to know for a certain time that we have to do all day that we have to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Well, here's the bill. It says, the fourth bill that should have an effect on the retirement system for the state of Virginia, there shall be a chance to build an office along with the judgment process. It should be a gift bill of stock, as well as the impact of the bill on the actuarial soundness of funding. Analysis shall be prepared by the legislative bureau of retirement benefits. So, that's what you can say.
Very mandatory.
Well, yeah, it says it should be a gift bill of stock, which is for the retirement board.
It's a very
well, that one just says what you're going to do.
It's a very good one. I mean, but I just, my question is, are we involved in these other boards or commissions or what?
Do you have any other magistrates here who want to take something else?
Please. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm definitely sitting here with a remark. I think you're going to hear some testimony today, probably from the administration, that all magistrates are full-time magistrates. There was a bill passed last year that I think they did for purpose of putting them under PDRS, say that they were full-time. However, it's a long rule that most of the magistrates in the state have other jobs, their housewives do only work good they are today. In fact, the judicial canons even refer to part-time judges and part-time magistrates. So they do recognize that there are part-time magistrates. I'm not going to bore with a lot of statistics, but I would like to just briefly show, and I only have a 1976 report from the court system. It's just 77 took out in a couple of 3 months. And then the top 10 courts, as far as filings, total filings in the top 10 courts are concerned, there are 3 of those in the top 10 that are manned by magistrates. There are also 3 of them that are outside the top 10 filing courts that are manned by district court judges, which shows that magistrates do have a considerable number of filings. In Kenai in 1966, Kenai was number 3rd. We had 4,381 total files. That's similar to civil files. Okay. So we are busy. We do quite a bit. I would also like to refer to one more section, which has to do with the district court dispositions for full-time equivalent judges. In other words, how many cases each judge has concluded during the year disposed of. Entries ranked number 1st. With 5,983 dispositions for full-time judges. Kenai ranked 2nd with 4,219 dispositions for full-time judges. And with Fairbanks is 3rd, and it goes on with the top 12 in the system, 5 of them are manned by magistrates. It seems to me that those statistics weren't more than this itself. It seems to me like it's more than more. I think that would conclude my testimony. Any questions?
I kind of agree with the testimony. I just wanted to do it because the tone of the testimony may sound like maybe we were not excited to committee or something, but we aren't. You know, Ms. Burke has seen us, you know, throw goals in the direction of the judges. Three or 4 years anyway. But why should we change our long-standing traditions to me? I don't think that's fantastic.
But I think it's a good bill, and I appreciate that we could follow the law we had in our school with regard to the renewal of the expense on the retirement system.
That was a very necessary thing because the political pressure was such that we were getting so many bills in and so many laws about the retirement system that we did not want to end up in a situation like New York or some of the states where retirement systems get completed or not handled responsibly. So that's the reason that bill, I guess, should be written. I know it was referring to this bill had been earlier than it's been referred to that bill.
No, they're not headed that way. So the other thing, bill introduced by President Malone last year, which is House Bill 456, similar to this bill. I think the basic difference being that President Malone's bill is the Pittsburgh bill, which is not
aging now, so right here.
I think it's been said that we don't really have to look at the Pittsburgh bill.
The last statement was, you think that the words of the magistrate choose requires more than a salary, deserves more than a salary.
I think so. We're going to understand judicial care and full-time magistrates are as far as they are outside that concern. Whereas the part-time magistrates, a lot of them full time jobs outside.
But you do have a retirement.
That's what
she said. And the way you said it implies you need to be.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
going to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is the average? Is there such a thing as an average salary for the average magistrate? I think that short salary, magistrate 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I am only doing up top magistrate salary, 28,000 plus.
Thank you.
enjoy your questions. Pretty much I sponsored a request. And the thing that I was going to say was pretty much an emphasis on the chair. I hope that we have got some information as far as what I hope that probably would hold this. So I think that's about it. If you have any questions, I'm silent.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was mentioned in earlier testimony that I do have similar legislation pending in this committee that was introduced last year. And it's along the lines of House Bill 727. The basic difference is that the other legislation would also establish a judicial contributory retirement system. So basically, Mr. Chairman, I do support House Bill 727. The reason that I do is that I think that, I know the argument's made many times with respect to retirement system questions, but I think it is a matter of equity. You have people that have all the responsibilities, usually a district court judge, working full-time, they're dealing with basically the same type of cases. They have to meet the same ethical standards, and for some arbitrary reason, they're excluded from the benefits of the judicial retirement system. And I think that it is a matter of equity to include those people in the judicial retirement system. That's why I support the legislation. I don't have any comments as to cost. I haven't seen a fiscal note. I am sending a request to the board, the retirement board that the legislature established. I noticed that they had not made any comments on any pending legislation on judicial retirement. I asked them for comments on this legislation. But I think it's a matter of equity. And except for the, except for the title, whatever's in the name, there's no reason that these people should not be included under the judicial retirement system. You can argue about the cost, I admit, and I understand that there's a difference as to opinion as the actuarial impact of the legislation. That's something I think probably could be settled by a report from the retirement board. But the only reason that I would back off support the legislation is someone to show me why the legislation is not equitable. And I haven't heard any arguments made in that direction. And I'll be glad to try to answer any questions that people have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions?
For the record, I'm Susan Burke, Chief Counsel for the Administrative Office of the State Court System. And I come here feeling a little bit awkward opposing a bill that would extend benefits to employees of the court system. But in any event, I am here to oppose this bill. This isn't the first time this question has come up. It was included in Representative Moore's bill last year, and there was some talk of introducing similar legislation in the Senate. Our Chief Justice corresponded, I know, with the President of the Senate, and not sure with the Speaker of the House, in opposition. So the Supreme Court, at least, has gone on record as not favoring the extension of judicial retirement benefits to the magistrate. Basically, the reasons are as follows. There are some philosophical reasons, and then some technical problems to doing it. And I'll get into the philosophical things first very briefly. First of all, it isn't a secret that the judicial retirement system is extensive and it's generous to those who are included under it. And in thinking about this proposition, we ask the question whether the reason for having a distinct and generous retirement program so true for magistrates as well as for judges, and we really don't think that those reasons or purposes should hold true. I see two basic purposes to having a judicial retirement system along the lines that we have now. The first is to attract people of the highest possible qualifications in the middle of, hopefully, in the middle of successful law careers, to attract them to take a job on off the bench. One of those attractions is an attempt to balance out what a lawyer might give up in terms of future or potential earnings in a law career. The second purpose is to provide a source of fairly inexpensive assistance, judicial assistance, by each of the retired judges and pro tem judges. The Bankton Alaska is fairly young at this point, but very gradually judges are beginning to retire, and we do have judges now available who can and do serve pro tem for the difference between what their retirement pay is and what current salary is. So when we have fluctuations in caseloads and we get into a crunch, we can call upon these people to come back and assist, but they're not very much money. With respect to this latter service, when we get into this kind of caseload crunch and we've got superior court cases on the calendar, we can't go out and take someone from the street, if you will, to serve pro tem. They have to be real superior court judges who are going to be given to the retention process. If we have a caseload crunch, we literally can put out a recruitment bulletin and within a relatively short period of time provide the directions to my potential magistrate. So the second service doesn't really apply with respect to the magistrate. You know, I think that's both the first. And I don't want to sound ungrateful by any means with respect to the work that the magistrates have done and the service that they do. I'm perfectly aware of the terrifically good work, the level of work that a number of our magistrates have been performing. But we simply don't have the recruitment or market situation with respect to recruiting for magistrates that can do respect. And this relates to some extent to Mr. Brown's bill that we have here. But when you're trying to attract
We have the court system closed in 1600.
Yes.
After being told by some judges that the Supreme Court is
We just don't have the same kind of recruiting problem. Not dealing with the narrow field where the assistants in the field are hopeful of making their way and making their way with some financial benefit. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't happen. That's the area in which we're trying to recruit judges. And from time to time, we really have had trouble getting people to apply for judgeship. I'm not sure that salary was at least a factor in the recent instance. I think in Phoenix it was very, very hard. We had to open the recruit this point. But in any event, obviously we want to attract good magistrates and good people to the system, and I think we have. But we want to attract good employees at all levels in the court system. We want to have good clerk support. We hope to have good staff counsel for the administrative office. And so far, the CERS system has been a sufficient inducement with respect to recruiting qualified employees within other areas of employment in the court system. There are also some technical things that could cause problems in the future. It's clear that there are definite distinctions in certain areas between full-time and part-time magistrates. The lead statutes under Title 39 make a distinction between magistrates who serve the state on less than a full-time basis with respect to inclusion in the lead benefit statute. But there's
a... Another point, full-time, the word full-time and the distinction of introducing the statute, and if we have a statute that says full-time magistrate,
well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. The survey around and the people who do, caseload are so sufficient to do, certain people who were fairly confident in staying at their desks from 8 to 4:30 with something useful to do during that time are considered full-time magistrates. But I see the distinction beginning to blur and get a little bit more confused in certain areas. For retirement purposes, all magistrates are considered full-time because they're on call 24 hours a day. Salaries are, to some extent, dependent on the amount of time that is necessary for a magistrate to spend in actual duty, but that's really not the only factor. But beyond that, when you're getting into judicial retirement as opposed to CERS, you're assuming that you've got a standard uniform salary base on which to base the benefits. under CERS, I think it's whatever percent you accumulated times the highest year. I know less about my own system than I do about the judge's system, but I think that's the way it works. But, and with the judges, you have uniform salaries. All district court judges make the same amount of money throughout the state and the same with the other levels. But you don't have that with magistrates. The other thing that you've got that's a little bit confusing is that the salaries can fluctuate up and down. Magistrates are not under the constitutional protection with respect to salaries that other judges in the system are, certainly superior. The salaries can go up and down with respect to a particular magistrate pool. If you have a caseload rise and fall for some reason, given the economic circumstances of a particular community, you can have the same person sitting in a magistrate post for 10 years, and maybe the salary goes up and maybe the salary goes down, the person retires, the salary can continue to go down, or at least go down relative to other magistrates. We picked on the four levels of magistrate salary several years ago because it seemed to work and it seemed to be fairly equitable, but it may not always be that way, to work out salaries, equitable salaries among the magistrates. And at this point in time, the legislature has given the Supreme Court the authority to set magistrate salaries. So it's subject to fluctuations in the Senate, and there may be problems figuring out what the proper salary base is. It's a technical thing that I assume great minds could overcome. One in favor of the bill in particular. The other problem is what you do about a person who becomes a magistrate, say starts out part-time, caseload rises, starts working full-time for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, say 5 years for purposes of vesting, and then because of the economies of the community, the caseload goes way down, the person stops being a full-time magistrate. Are they entitled to service credit for the years previously as a part-time magistrate? Do they have to be a part-time magistrate or a full-time magistrate at the time of the hearing? And on and on and on. I mean, we can see a number of technical problems that might occur figuring out whether someone is in fact entitled to benefits as a full-time magistrate. A district court judge or a superior court judge, they're always assumed to be full-time. You either are one or you aren't one. Possibility of questioning about it, at least based on external forces, certainly such as the fluctuations in caseloads. Magistrates both also get abolished and reestablished in other locations if based on the needs of the judicial service. I guess I would say that with respect to the question of equity that has been raised, I don't know whether my answer would be considered satisfactory. But I guess I view a retirement, this judicial retirement system, as not so much a reward for service well done in the past, as an attraction for good people whom we hope and expect will provide top quality service. Obviously, there are some rewards for past service involved in that. But I think the primary fundamental purpose is at the beginning of the service, the attraction, as opposed to looking back and saying, magistrate so-and-so has done, or Judge Carlson has done a magnificent job and therefore deserves a great retirement. I guess I don't view the system as purposes other than that.
Good question. What is the position of the court system, if any? Were we to instead establish contributory retirement systems for the magistrates that we fund the PERS along the lines of the bill that you would not have to call a Knight's bill, House Bill 456?
I'm not sure. My brief does not extend beyond this particular bill, and I don't have a sense of how the Supreme Court would do that. I just didn't come down there.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to come back, Mr. Chairman, the question you raised earlier is the distinction between full-time and part-time magistrates. Specifically, I'd like to ask how the court system makes this determination at this time.
As I understand it, it's simply a matter of at some point in time, and I'm not sure that we ought to catch it at an accurate time in terms of applying, say, the lease of things to a particular magistrate. If something becomes known over a period of time that caseload and workload have risen to the point that full-time services of the magistrate are required. Does it sound that way? I guess maybe we don't have a system.
You have an ad hoc system.
Yeah, maybe on the street, because I don't know. I guess we don't have a system.
No, yes, you don't have a system.
We don't have a monitoring thing. We don't have a particular number of filings at which we say, this whole time. I mean, it's done on a post-by-post basis. And hopefully, you know, as I say, we say, you know, full-time for purposes of leave without causing
Mr. Chairman, it's not clear to me right now whether or not the court system actually makes that distinction. I guess I have to press the question. Does the court system at present discriminate, you know, as to full-time personnel, the magistrates, or part-time personnel? How do they do it, and what effect does that have, say, on things like salaries?
With respect to salaries, it has a peripheral effect. Because a magistrate is full time, doesn't really necessarily entitle that close to a certain level of salary. At the present time, the salary structure is such that the full time people who are in full time positions are distinguished from those who are in part time. We're forced to make the distinction with respect to leave benefits. Full time magistrates are under the regular leave statute, including these benefits just if any other state employee does, and I assume the right to cash payoff at the end upon termination and that sort of thing. Other judges in part-time magistrates, some of these benefits are provided by the state court. Do I, am I answering your question?
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I think I have enough of an answer to believe at least that, say, if statute were enacted requiring that the distinction be made, that you could do that, at least with the effective date of the act, because apparently there's some sort of system, even though it's ad hoc in effect now, that under which that determination is made, at least the purposes of leave. Is that correct?
If it's required to be made, it could be made, because we are doing it as best we can, and I now realize there's no rest system at all with respect to leave. Sure, it could be made.
All the parties to do, Gary, seem to remember that the ERS has rejected the union of the legislative system. You said something about all magistrates are concerned for a time of country for the union.
Oh, there was in the development of magistrate coverage under CERS, there was a time when it was unclear whether magistrates were covered at all, if the gentleman, correct me if I'm wrong. Until recently, and it may still be true, part-time employees, you know, CERS was extended to part-time employees very recently. Prior to that time, magistrates who were considered serving part-time weren't entitled to any retirement benefits. That, in effect, was an equitable sort of situation because they've been serving for years and years. So we tried to work partly with the legislation, but also administratively, with the retirement people, to kind of address the distinctions between a magistrate who's on call all the time and working, say, 20 hours a week, and a magistrate who's 30 hours a week. It's pretty hard to monitor the magistrate and the monitor to say whether or not the work is actually being done. So that is a terrific administrative problem, because you have to prorate time and retirement benefits. So if I'm in to work on hand, we ask them to treat all magistrates on full-time purposes of the CERS, and they agreed to do that. So that was handled largely.
What you're saying is, the part-time magistrate, we don't think it's $1,000 a year.
Yeah, that's it.
And the full-time was to make it $28,000. They both, that's what they charged to work January 1, 1978, they tested at the same time. The one's not full-time, the other one has a job. The one that's part-time, the other one has a master's.
you send an official request to them?
Equity really is there.